Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Welcome to another episode of the Shape of Work podcast. Joining me today on the show is Tina Mansukhani Garg. Tina is the CEO of Pink Lemonade, a marketing and branding expert. Tina is also a TEDx speaker. Welcome to our show, Tina.
Thank you, Yashwant. Pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure to have you on the show today. And I'm sure your experience will add a lot of value to our listeners.
Well, I think so.
Yeah, please. So, Tina, as always, we would like to just know more about the speaker so that our listeners can connect well moving forward over our discussions. Can you please walk us through on your career journey from where you started and then what actually interested you to be where you are today?
Sure. My journey was a very, very unique and a different one. And if it can be a little bit of a spark of inspiration to anybody else who may be in a similar place like me, I think I'd like to share that. I didn't start off by being a communications and branding, brand marketing professional. I started off in the area of science and wanting to do more in the space of computers and learn more about IT, etc. But through my graduation days, I was very, very clear that my first love was always writing communication and always thinking like a marketer in some sense of the way. And, I kind of worked with some publications, also overseas publications, Indian publications, and I tried to do as much as I could in the space of communication, even while I was doing my graduation and post-graduation. Mm-hmm. I signed up for another creative writing and marketing workshop from London, a college in London. And that was immensely brilliant in terms of teaching me the styles and communication methodologies that people should look at as they're going forward in the space of marketing. And I think that was the bedrock of my learning. And I was very, very diligent about how I did that. As soon as I finished and, life moved on, I got married and moved to Bangalore. We started our software enterprise and we were in the space of a lot of internet-based solutions, design and stuff like this. And we handled one of India's best communities, youth-based communities, which was called Zedang.com at that point in time. We had about 350 writers and it was on about.com. And as the owner of the organization, as the person who was interested in writing content, content development, brand content, etc., I became the content manager for that portal and handled all different kinds of writing on a variety of subjects from management to food to, love and poetry. And there was all different kinds of content that came about. And that kind of cemented the fact that I was always going to be in a career around content, around marketing and branding. Did a corporate stint with Ernst & Young shortly after that and with a few agencies in Bangalore. And I decided in 2009-10 that I wanted to move out on my own. And a number of different consulting assignments, including something with BIL, something with EMID, something with diversity and inclusion firms, etc. And I thought it was time for me to do something on my own. In 2011, I graduated with from the ISB course, from a course at the ISB, and I decided that it was time to set up my own team and brought in people from writing backgrounds, designing backgrounds, servicing backgrounds. And there's been no looking back after that because the agency has only grown month on month, year on year. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey.
Excellent. Very well said. And it was a great listen. And I'm sure with the kind of exposure that you've got and then being so creative and then started your journey almost 10 years back, our wish is to just grow much more further on this.
Thank you, Yashwan. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Tina, we just read one of your article about the thing that you've written about the founder's dilemma. And then we all know that, okay, it's an era of startups. And then we also know that a place like Bangalore, there are so many startups that are actually coming in. And then you've very well written there telling about the founder's dilemma as to how a founder has to play multiple roles and then the role transition as the startup keeps on growing at every level. And in your opinion, do you think that the same applies even to the employees and the ones who are the key decision makers in an organization, and just give us some light on that.
Sure. So I certainly have been through the same thing myself. And I've seen, you know, what founders do at the early part of their journey is way different than what founders will do as the organization grows, because you've got to stop being so founder-led. You've got to be stop being so involved in everything that, you know, the organization does and every act or every service that the organization provides, to taking on the role of a visionary, of a strategist, of doing certain things that are needed at that part of your journey. And I think founders most often find it very hard to detach, very hard to let go of certain amount of things like this. And, you know, we over-glamorize the fact that we've got to continue to being involved. We've got to continue to being the people who will look into every minute aspect. Of course, the early part of the journey is very exciting because, you know, as people working with a common vision, it's the founder that binds so many people together. And their vision is the one that holds everybody, and almost working overnight to roll out plans, roll out market launches, working overnight to, you know, to possibly change or pivot right away, you know, going out into the market and doing things yourself. I've heard so many wonderful stories of food and beverage founders who've literally gone to apartments themselves and stood there and kind of sold their products themselves, sold their new launches themselves and things like that. You can't do it at the later part of the journey. It's not possible to do stuff like this at the later part of the journey. And, you know, that comes with a whole lot of attitude of launch an MVP today, do fail fast today, go forward with something different tomorrow and things, bring on a person, and a quick methodology of new people on board, let go of that, move them into something else. Much later, of course, the founders have to be very careful about such decisions, because what I feel is you're carrying a lot more people with you. You have a lot of developed mindsets that have come in, mature workforce also develops to be more mature, and plus you attract more talent. You have a lot more money going out behind every decision that you take, and there are partnerships where associations of all of that which need to be carefully decided. So it cannot be a single founder's decision. It cannot be something that you can involve yourself at the micro level. You've got to take the ship where it needs to, you know, go. And I recently, when I did another course from the ISB, the first paper that they sent out to us to read was about the people who got you here are not the people who will take you forward. And I think the founder's dilemma also has to do with being ready to accept that mindset, that if my talent needs to grow, my talent needs to develop further, and if I need to get fresh blood into the organization, there should be willingness to do it. Of course, there are the loyalists who have been with you in your journey right from the beginning, but it's also important for them to move up, and like you very rightly said, the next level also has to work with some amount of this delegation, some amount of this upskilling, and some amount of a larger vision. Because individual contributors, you know, very often I've seen very few people who are able to play the role of an individual contributor for a very long time. They also have to grow to be leaders, because by tenure, leadership does come in. By ability of being the early ones, the leadership does come in. And I think they need to grow themselves to that level as well. And that's one of my mandates, actually, always to tell my team, look at individual growth of the people in your teams, because the moment you concentrate on growing individuals, you concentrate on actually developing their careers, by default, you've grown the capabilities of the organization as well. So that's a big one. And yes, the next level also naturally deals with all of these.
Excellent. Very well said. Because it's very important for any organization to see that, especially the founders, the way that look at it, they have to actually have to create the next set of leaders, just like by sharing the vision, what they carry for an organization. And then downstream, that vision has to be aligned to the kind of leaders who are actually taking up the next level. In fact, I've seen many of the organizations where the founders feel that, okay, the moment I just share the vision, or the moment I give the responsibility to somebody else, the company may grow in a wrong path. But that's a very wrong way of thinking, because there is always a certain limitation for a founder to actually do a work. If not, the moment they get involved in the transactional activities, the thinking and the growth of the company takes a hit.
You're absolutely right. I think, you know, you're the captain of the ship. Yes. And if you're not thinking what next, who's going to be thinking what next?
Exactly.
You can't be doing what's now. You've got to think of what next. And one of the most important things that I feel founders should have at hand is data analytics, reports, and collection of this data. And, you know, in fact, today I've realized that so much of a founder's work, almost 30-35% I think of a founder's work or a CEO's work can easily be done by automation or technology. True. And so much of that is available if we learn how to use that technology to our advantage. Correct. So, you know, that's another one that you need to be spending time doing certain things like this and doing things for your organization that you never did before. Because a 20-member organization is not a 200-member organization.
True. Yeah. And there's also a demand for us to be at pace as what the market demands. That's more important for us to just be on the technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Right. So when you're just talking about the technology, again going back to one of your articles, you had suggested, okay, the chatbots will turn human-like and would save the brands a lot of time and money in screening the customer's queries, right? So in fact, before it is sent to the human staff, there is a filtration of the queries that are done from the chatbots and then it's actually given to the human staff. So in your opinion, do you think that, okay, this would also ease the burden of employees handling customers' queries moving forward? And if you feel so, what do you think are the ways through which a company can use marketing to reach to customers as well as for the benefit of the employees?
I think in every walk of life, Yashwan, today, if you see, you are interfacing with a chatbot in almost every walk of life. From a B2B website, if you go for, I have a chatbot on Pink Lemonade's website as well. You look at ordering food from the likes of Swiggy. You look at banking services. You look at even an e-commerce thing where you order a dress or a shirt or a top or whatever. They immediately put you on a chatbot on a WhatsApp API and they ask you questions. They talk to you about your deliveries and things like this. So, you know, organizations have realized that so much of the work which can be done by automation and can be done by chatbots and, you know, some element of prediction in terms of orders, customer service, etc., is hugely important and cuts down the workforce, reduces the time, enhances the customer service. And people are willing to pay for more customer service today.
Yes,
you know, for response, because I mean, you and I are human beings as well. If your orders is delayed and you have to talk to a chatbot, it gets irritating as well.
True.
If your query is answered by the chatbot faster than a human, of course you're happier for it. And you know exactly what, you know, how far your food is and how long it will now take to get to you, etc. So when it comes to organizations, I feel there's a number of things that we can do as well to cut down human interfacing and cut down the mundane work for them. Certainly in the space of HR, I see, you know, the amount of time recruiters spend. And globally, I think recruiters say about 43% of the, you know, the monotony of a recruitment work can be reduced by actually introducing automation. It can be reduced really to a large extent. And, you know, like, for example, even a chatbot can help you in that aspect. What a kind of, you know, roles that you're looking for? How many years of experience do you have? Which industry are you from? And a chatbot can get you to answer all of those. By the end of it, your resume is automatically sorted into the pool that it needs to go to or to the manager that it needs to go to. And it's cutting down a recruiter's time greatly. Likewise, if you have certain kind of predictive data that you can give me and I'll be able to easily tell where is my pool of CVs coming in from, where is my pool of, you know, where do I get the best people who stay with me? And naturally, you have to emphasize on those kind of channels more than the other channels.
Right.
In the space of marketing also, there's so much today that we can do. The whole automation of your social posts, the whole talent branding that you can do with, you know, the kind of predictiveness, the kind of keywords that work and using those search engines, you know, the tools that you need to listen to social listening today and getting the kind of keywords that your target audience is listening to. It's all automated. You really don't have to think about it and search the web, you know, a la Google and sit and search over there and try and ask, see what are the kinds of things that people are reading. Because all of these things can be very well done with the machine intelligence. And the biggest advantage of technology to me, you know, Yashwant, is the fact that you're collecting data that can help you do tomorrow's decisions better, make tomorrow's decisions faster.
Yes, right. You touched upon something on the social post, right? Let me just ask you something on those lines. Okay. And See, these days we see that, okay, there are a lot of the employees who create their personal branding in social media, right? So they want to just write some articles, and then though they're representing an organization, we see that many people are very keen on building their personal brand. Okay, so what's your take on the whole point, telling that, okay, whether this also helps the employer branding by creating the personal brand of the employees within an organization? And when we have the social channels like LinkedIn, is not just for the beneficial of the individual level, but also at the company as a whole. So what's your take on that?
I think it's a great one. I think everybody should look at creating a personal brand, because the macrocosm that the organization is a sum of parts. And I think you really need people to be able to think of themselves in an elevated manner, people to project themselves in an elevated manner. And that is what makes the whole. And I think in a branding organization like mine, I think it's extremely important that people are cognizant of the brand they present. Our emphasis is hugely on learning. And if people can share that learning with the world outside, you are coming across as a thought leader. You are coming across as an individual who is an expert in the space of branding and marketing. And that is working wonders for not just your profile, but the organization's profile as well. Many organizations come to us today telling us that we'd like you to conduct sessions on how organizations can brand them, how people, my CXO suite, can brand itself professionally and personal branding. I think it's extremely important also to realize that you have a persona in the world outside, and how is that brand being projected to the world outside? Is Tina seen as an expert in a space? Is somebody else seen as an expert in the space of strategy? Is a third person seen as an expert in marketing rollouts, product launches? What is it that you want to be standing for? What is it that you do stand for? It's important for people to speak like this. So, number of reasons why. One, of course, the organization itself elevates when you are presenting yourself well. Second, people who research you, and studies show that before a client comes to you, over 70-80% of the clients look you up on LinkedIn before they come in to meet you. And if you crafted your persona and you've crafted it correctly there, they are already aware of what can connect with you on. Third, human psyche says that if you find a common factor in two people, there is a bond immediately created.
True.
So if people were to see your opinions, articles, expressions, what you share online, if they connect with that, they've already started liking you before they meet you. So yes. A lot of this is to do with how you market yourself, essentially. It's very beneficial to any brand today. And I'm very happy to project most of my leaders, and they represent the organization. They represent Pink Lemonade at various speaking events. They take on a number of different things like this, and they represent at different guest lectures that we do with the clients that we speak on, speak to, etc. And very, very important. Brands don't realize actually that how much of this virality goes places, and how much word of mouth gets created, because every one person's connection is your connection eventually at the organization as well.
Right. Very well put across. So in fact, we spoke in the beginning something about the importance of communication, right? So in your opinion, in your experience, Tina, and can you just tell us when it comes to the brand communication, what are some of the ways or strategies you follow within the organization for internal communication? And especially these days, we are all working remote, and then which is the need of the hour.
Some fantastic examples actually that I've come across in the space of, I mean, since March 2020, and people are looking to connect with people in different ways. And of course, there are the email signatures now, which are also used to communicate something. It's real estate in your email that goes out. There are the calendar invites that are used to share an interesting document or share something funny or humorous and things like that. Videos have picked up hugely, and we do a lot of them also, you know, to communicate with our people. There are a lot of things that go out on WhatsApp. It's very, very interesting to run contests, other things, polls and things like that on WhatsApp. In fact, I have to tell you, the funniest contribution that we had at Pink Lemonade was when we were doing a meme on one of our social platforms, and we were asking, what is the funniest thing a client has told you? And no less than 500 messages on the Pink Lemonade channel that day, because there were so many people who are, who were wanting to contribute. Communication on WhatsApp that day became such an interesting one, and the whole organization was buzzing with inputs. Everybody's pain area seemed to be the same one. Of course, I know a part of it is cribbing, a part of it was in jest and all of that. But WhatsApp turned out as a beautiful medium. The other thing that we see is creating ambassadors in different teams. They are your communications box, because each group has its own informal WhatsApp group. And how do you percolate information informally? You want to do it formally, but of course the channel of WhatsApp is informal. You've appointed an ambassador in each of the teams, and they are carrying the responsibility and onus of communicating what the communications head wants to communicate or the CEO wants to communicate. We ourselves have started a beautiful newsletter, which goes online, of course. People can consume it on their emails and their WhatsApp. And we carry a whole lot of things in that, which people are not aware of, because every day you're not able to understand who are the new brands you work with, what are the successes, what are the appreciations received, what are the wins of the organization, what are the changes we're making. So it's a lovely newsletter that is well-rounded. Newsletter is a thing of the old, however. I do see other things like you can centrally deploy a wallpaper. You can centrally deploy, like I said, the email signature can change overnight, and you just have to refresh, the one that you have on a common resource. And those are things easy to do. But podcasts are a very, very important medium that we are seeing now. And voice notes, podcasts that the CEO can leave for everybody else. A personalized, micro-learning nugget that you can leave for the others is an important one today. So things like this are very critical. And many people don't want to possibly express themselves in words or writing or even voice, but they will certainly participate in quizzes and polls. So those are important things that, those are micro interactions for them. They may not be articulate enough to say, I want to say that, but I can definitely comment on what is the way of life today, how many hours are we working. So these features have started being used very interestingly by organizations, and we are also doing many of these. Of course, lots of fun sessions by interesting speakers. We've had, Anisha Padukone come in and talk to us about mental wellness. We're talking to an ex-basketball champion who's going to come in and talk to our team force on something else. We're talking, last month was the LGBT month, and we have an expert coming in to talk to us about diversity and inclusion. So these kind of vibrant influences, which are not necessarily work-related, but really giving people a break in their day to listen to other voices, other interesting areas, have really created learning opportunities and engagement opportunities for people.
Yeah, so very well said. In fact, the importance of communication, you have just put it across the multiple ways of communication, how effective it could be. It could be the written, or it could be verbal, it could be the podcast and everything. So how it actually is very effective to the listener and then to the reader is what it actually matters. And then how it can actually change the perspective is also something which is very important. You put it across very well. Thanks for that. Okay. And these days, what we see is that, okay, there's something called as social selling on LinkedIn, right? So, and in one of the pieces that I was just listening to, you also talked about the same topic, the social selling on LinkedIn. Do you think that the same tactics could be used even for attracting the right candidate for an organization? And could you suggest some ways through which this can be achieved, in your opinion?
Yes, social selling has, I think a very good, I'll come back to human psychology and how we present ourselves. Every time we present ourselves, what are we doing essentially? We're putting our best foot forward. We are dressed the way we want someone to look at us and think of us. We talk the way we want someone to appreciate us or think that we are intelligent, or whatever we are talking is making hitting home the right way. What are we doing? We're just selling ourselves. We're marketing ourselves at every point in time. So when you do it socially and you do it online, that is exactly what it amounts to as well. And I think everything that we do online today, professionally and personally, is selling ourselves or an aspect of ourselves in the right manner possible. The right manner, again, is subjective, because to each their own, their sensibilities change. And what they are putting out there is subject to what they are willing to put out there about themselves. So I'm going to talk about it professionally today, because I think the impact of what an organization does and what a person does in the professional workspace as somebody who is presenting a social message out there, or a message that is consumed by social interactions and their social connections, is extremely critical to the perception that the other side will make of them. So earlier I touched upon the fact that you are presenting your personal brand. Similarly, the organization has a mandate to present themselves in a manner of what do they stand for? What are the benefits and policies that go out? What is the way of life out there? What is leadership thinking like? What is leadership caring for them like? Is the organization empathetic? Is the organization driven by learning, by ethics? Is the organization, what is the culture like? And culture really is the set of behaviors that are demonstrated by the whole organization. Yes. So what is it that you are putting out there to help others understand what life for them is going to be is all about that social selling and talent branding. I think it's the HR and the communication head's responsibility to make sure that the world outside is listening to the right things about your organization, because there are ample people out there who will say the wrong things, because people pet, people vent, people don't see the larger picture always. And their minute experiences or their minute and sometimes unfair expectations create a mindset which I think the responsibility then lies with the communication leaders to see what is it that can be put across as the right talent brand. I think life at LinkedIn is a very popular medium. I think yes. Instagram is the largest medium where people experience vignettes of life at an organization today. Instagram stories are very interesting things to hear. And if you can allow people to blog for you, I think that's beautiful. To blog or even vlog, if you can allow them to do that for you, I think little snippets like this are very, very interesting for people to hear from the organizational members itself. And what I would absolutely love and I want to roll out at Pink Lemonade is to allow one of our members to own our channels for the week, own our Twitter, own our LinkedIn, own our Facebook and Instagram handles for the week, and go out there and put what you think is Pink Lemonade all about, because that is the true fact of facet of Pink Lemonade. That's the true little mantras that we want to put out there. And that creates a set of expectations, that creates a set of, beliefs that people buy into, because they come into that entire set of beliefs. They don't just come to do exactly what they did at other workplaces.
Right.
We certainly invite them into a new way of being, because we do a ton of different things for us. In fact, Pink Lemonade has massage sessions. Pink Lemonade has pink holidays that we give working days off with spa vouchers. We've got hobby classes and things. These are things that are very different. These are things that are extremely hugely different. And I do believe that leadership should always use an element of creativity in every way of, every aspect of being of that organization. And likewise, if you can do it talent-wise, if you can do something fun and interesting, you should be able to roll that out online as well.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. So it's a good information, definitely, yes. Yeah. Yeah, also, as usual, Tina, time is always pressing for all of us. And thank you so much for being with us. And then it was quite informative. And then really appreciate your time and then for sharing your experiences, sharing your thoughts, sharing your vision for our listeners, for the benefit of our listeners. Thank you so much. Wish you all the best. Stay safe.
Thank you, Yashwant. And I'm hugely inspired by the products you have. I think it's a very, very valid space that you've quickly innovated in terms of coming out with new products and solutions for a time that everybody's confused about.
Yes.
I, for one, am definitely going to explore, and all the best to you guys as well.
Thank you so much. Wish you all the best.